Coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
Welcome to Hagman. It is the Hagman Report, where truth can't be silenced. We will not be silenced. I want to welcome everyone to a great show for you. We've got lined up today. Again, Hagman Report, where truth can't be silenced. Websites where you can find us, HagmanReportLive.com. That's HagmanReportLive.com. That's where our video and audio segments are. And HagmanReport.com there for print material, contributions, contributors, and such. A couple of things. You know, we're seeing now where the left, and especially the left, now this is not, and I'm sad to say that this has gone from anything remotely scientific and physician oriented to pure political pressure and pure political bunk with respect to this corona, the Chinese Communist Party virus, this coronavirus. You're seeing these lockdowns anew, and of course we're talking about masks now. And masks are a symbol of if you're not wearing a mask, then you're one of them. Meaning you're obviously a pro-Trump, pro-right conservative, and you're ignorant to science if you're not wearing a mask. Wait, these are the same people. Hang on a minute. I just want to get this through my head here. These are the same people who are saying you can have, you know, multiple, 57 pronouns for genders, right? These are the same people who say, well, you know, you don't have to be a man. You don't have to be a woman. You can be things in between. Yeah. Where's the science on that? All right. And I can go on and on, but you get the idea. So, and then those who do wear the masks are the ones that are, acting as really the mask police as well. A lot of them are. How dare you not wear a mask? How dare you? How dare you? In the words of Greta Thunberg. Yeah. Is that going to get me kicked off? Whatever. All right. It's interesting. If you're watching over this past several days, religious iconic statues, including that of, the Virgin Mary targeted in Boston, New York, church set on fire, you know, 249-year-old church burn. I don't think any of this obviously is by accident. It doesn't happen by accident. These are being targeted. Churches are being targeted, religious institutions are being targeted. I told you about this before. And then, of course, you've got, oh my goodness, what? You've got the couple in St. Louis having a warrant served upon them, having their guns taken away. You know, the iconic picture, them in front of their majestic estate. The gentleman with an AR-15 and the woman with a pistol, and they're going after them in a big way. All right. So, okay, there's that. And then you've got, I don't know whether you saw this, and I'll put the link up in the program description. But, well, you know, I'll mention this a little bit here. Hang on. The U.S. Sun, the newspaper. Just go to the-sun.com. Trump fights Fauci, White House. Trump fights Fauci. White House released list of all Dr. Fauci's mistakes in damning coronavirus indictment as Trump feud heats up. There's a lot there. I'm not going to get into it. You can see it. I think a lot of people today they understand pretty much what's going on. The mask is a, the mask is more than just, to me, the mask is meaningless in terms of trying to fight a virus and infection, getting, you know, being infected by a virus. The cloth is ineffective. I mean, the size of the virus, you know, 0.25 microns versus, 0.5 microns and so on. You know, it's like taking a tennis racket and trying to kill mosquitoes. It's just not going to work. All right. Shame, shame, shame. Washington Redskins changing their name to acquiesce to a Marxist mob. Now, you know, Eric the Tech, you're into sports. Washington Redskins.
Do they pick a name?
No, not yet, which is interesting. I haven't heard it if they have. They're going to wait a couple of days. We'll reveal the new name later. What do you make of this being a fan of sports? I could care less, but I do care in the sense that for a team to say, yeah, well, if that's offensive, oh, shut up. Just shut up. What do you think?
I think what comes to mind when you say Redskins, Washington Redskins out of...
It's the team, it's Washington Redskins. Team. What?
It's just a football team.
It's not, but what's the baseball team? Washington what?
Nationals.
Damn, that's offensive.
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
Washington. Pittsburgh Pirates, that's offensive.
Well, hey, don't give me any ideas. But wait a second, Washington Nationals, we can't have, it's gotta be Washington Globalists, doesn't it?
Pretty soon, teams will just be letters. Washington Z.
Seriously.
There can be offense found in everything.
Yeah, exactly. Good point. Here's the thing. I believe we're closer to a civil war than ever before. And now's the time that we're going to have to pick up and, decide which side we're on. And if you haven't done so already, and I think you have. And, which side would God be on? And I think God would be on. Look, I'm very concerned about that. As far as, you know, I mean, I'm very concerned. I want to fight the fight of the righteous, obviously. I don't see anything righteous about being a Marxist. I don't see anything righteous about beating the hell out of defenseless people. I don't see anything righteous about taking away, or taking over parts of cities. I don't see anything righteous about socialism, Marxism, or communism. I don't see anything righteous in that respect. And, so anyway, we have to understand, in my view, I'm not a preacher. I'm not a minister. I don't claim to be. I don't want to be. Believe me, they've got a tough job. But I'll say this. I've lived long enough to know that, you know, you've got mopes and dopes out there, and you've got people who really,
there you go. Washington mopes and dopes.
You know, maybe we should submit that. Yeah.
For the Washington Democrats. Washington liberals.
And it's Monday. All right. Before we bring John Moore on, I want to toss out a video. You know, one thing that I think we have to really understand is the complex funding and the mechanical ideology of Black Lives Matter. It's Black Lives Matter is a front group for the communist, Antifa, but it's even bigger than that. All of these groups, Black Lives Matter, and Antifa is perhaps the largest one. But you've got these funding mechanisms. And by the way, think about this, and I could rant all day long. I'm not going to do that, but you have, de Blasio out there, Wilhelm, painting the, street, you know, Black Lives Matter in front of Trump Tower. First of all, again, how dare you? But what cojones, right? For him to do that. You talk about a classless, you talk about lacking class. anyway, in another part of the country, Contra Costa, California, a man and a woman were taking black paint. And I'm not sure how this all worked out, but covering parts of a couple of letters of Black Lives Matter, defacing the mural, as if that's a friggin' mural on the street, right? And being charged with a hate crime. And then another part of the country, a rainbow kind of flag design on the street. Somebody turned the corner and left a skid mark on the rainbow. I could make jokes about that for all day long. I'm not going to. You know, who's the catcher, who's the pitcher, right? Skid marks on the rainbow, but anyway. The police are looking at that as a hate crime. Things are going to bust wide open at the seams. I'm going to play this video, short video, then bring, hopefully John can, will be able to hear or see or both this video. And, we'll get his take on it on the other side. This is about Black Lives Matter to some extent, but the movements and the structure of this, but what I really want to get into is the funding and the ideology, where this is all coming from. You know, this BLM has been ubiquitous, over the past several weeks. And I want to say this, a huge, and I mean a huge part of this, and I'm going to have Joel Gilbert on this show, is Joel Gilbert's findings that the witness for the prosecution of George Zimmerman in the Trayvon Martin case, of which John Moore knows a whole ton about, was a fake. And he proved it. A fake. So the entire Trayvon Martin, George Zimmerman issue, trial, it was a fake. Go to HagmanReport.com and look at watch the video there about punching holes in the Trayvon Martin case. You're not going to believe it. Joel Gilbert does a great job. I'll have him on. But watch this about Black Lives Matter, the movement, and everything around it. Go ahead and play it.
Black Lives Matter is a lie. There is no genocide of young, innocent black men. In 2019, there were only 10 cases in which unarmed African Americans were fatally shot by the police. In 5 out of 10 cases, an officer was attacked just before the shooting. And in 2 of the remaining 4, the officer was criminally charged. Where is the injustice? Also in 2019, there were 25 unarmed white Americans who were fatally shot by the police. According to FBI statistics, even though African Americans make up only 13% of the population, they commit over 50% of all murder in America. Blacks kill 10 times the amount of whites as whites kill blacks. And a police officer is 18 and a half times more likely to be killed by a black male than an unarmed black male is to be killed by a police officer. Black Lives Matter has been a lie since its very beginning. In 2013, the movement began on social media after the acquittal of George Zimmerman in the shooting death of Trayvon Martin. But the case against Zimmerman was a lie. The prosecution had used an imposter as a fake witness, who they claimed wrote the only piece of criminal evidence they had, a letter that the fake witness admitted under oath to not writing. Founded by known communists and fueled with millions of dollars from George Soros, Black Lives Matter organized riots in Ferguson, Baltimore, and Chicago, and began recruiting an army of haters, hiding beneath the guise of social justice. The entire foundation of Black Lives Matter is an obvious lie, and yet the lie sells. It sells because communities have been broken by government programs such as LBJ's War on Poverty that incentivized single motherhood and got young people hooked on welfare handouts. It sells because people worship their favorite celebrities like false idols and believe the media is a source of undisputed truth. It sells because people are afraid of being called a racist, even when they know it's a lie. And it sells because many prefer their own rage over seeking the truth. Following the COVID-19 shutdown, perhaps the most traumatizing time for any American alive, Black Lives Matter joined forces with Antifa and used a senseless murder as an excuse to wage war upon the American people, dragging innocent people from their cars, burning homes to the ground, looting everything in sight, and demanding that white people bow before them and kiss their feet. They are subjugating white people, parading them around in chains, and demanding the dissolution of the police department. What do you suppose is coming next? Black Lives Matter is a dangerous cancer that is poisoning our already damaged society. The mainstream media, our elected officials, world leaders, and practically every multinational corporation are all on board with BLM. But the real problem is that we allow the lie to exist when all we have to do is be brave, tell the truth, and seek justice. In the end, we will get exactly what we deserve. For InfoWars.com, this is Greg Reese.
All right, that was a pretty good expose. I think it was a pretty good foundational expose about Black Lives Matter and about what's going on. There's one more video that once John comes on, we start talking about masks, I want to get into. Before I bring John on, I want to mention, spoke to Roger Stone, and he wanted me to express to you his thanks and his appreciation for everyone who prayed for him and interceded on his behalf, whether it was signing the petition or engaging in some other activities. So Roger Stone, having received a commutation from President Trump, thanks each and every one of you. And I put it on, I put something on Patreon, a post on Patreon. So if you haven't checked that out, go ahead and check that out. And there's a video with that that only the Patreon supporters will see. Trying to figure out how we can fix it. We can get that same video. It's 2 minutes long to those using other platforms. All right. With that, John Moore, thelibertyman.com. John, how are you, my friend?
Well, Doug, if I felt any better, it wouldn't be legal.
Yeah. Well, what's going on, man? What do you think?
It's been a couple of weeks since we've talked.
Yes.
I got some good news when it comes to face masks. Beginning possibly later this week and certainly next week, I'll be offering for sale face masks on my website. Very special face masks. They'll be made from mosquito netting. I'm serious. We were going to make them initially out of fish netting, but that wouldn't be comfortable against your skin. It's kind of rough.
Yeah.
But the fish netting is nice and soft. This came up. My Thursday guest, the John Moore Radio Show economic advisor, lives in Phoenix. Daytime temperatures in the shade, 115 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't wear a mask when you're outside, anywhere outside, you'll be charged with a criminal misdemeanor and fined $250. Now, for a healthy adult, wearing a mask when it's 115 degrees is going to be difficult. However, if you've got any kind of health issues at all, COPD, lung issues, heart issues, wearing a mask when it's 115 degrees, it just might kill you.
Yeah.
But if you're wearing a mask made from mosquito netting, you can breathe normally, be in compliance, and just mentioning this on my show, Doug, I've got inquiries from all over the country. People want to buy these things. I have to let them know they don't exist yet, but we hope that hopefully we'll be manufacturing and beginning them later this week. And have them for sale either later this week or next week. They're going to be hugely popular. The world's gone insane. It's not just the United States with its mask wearing. We've gone through, human beings have gone through multiple epidemics for centuries. And we know what we do during an epidemic. The sick people wear masks and the people who care for them wear masks. Nobody else wears a mask. That's what works. That's what we've done for centuries, and that's what should be done now. I've noticed the president, with one exception, visiting a Walter Reed Army Hospital, just doesn't wear a mask.
Right.
I think he's setting an example that we all can follow, Doug, don't you?
Yeah, I do. I do. Look, I think masks, having worked in EMS back in the day, I think masks have their place. And talking with physicians, they do have their place. But it's not, you know, in Walmart. It's not in the hardware store. And it's certainly not outside or by yourself in a house, which one Bozo was talking about, which I still don't get that, but yeah, you're right. So,
well, Doug, up until 5 months ago, you could walk into any emergency room in the country. You'd have healthcare professionals, nurses and doctors and various other healthcare professionals, waiting to have people walk in the door in the emergency room with every kind of communicable disease that you can think of. And they weren't wearing masks five months ago.
Yeah.
These are the healthcare professionals, nurses with several years education past high school, doctors with 8 to 12 years education past high school. They know what healthcare is. They know what works. They know what they need to do to finish their shift without getting sick. And they weren't wearing masks 5 months ago in the emergency rooms because they didn't need to. Despite infectious disease people coming in the door, that's the nature of an emergency room. They could be coming in there with any contagious infectious disease. But people in those positions 5 months ago did not wear masks. Now, of course, they are. What's changed? What's changed, Doug? Well, the chance of getting sick has not changed. What's changed is public policy. What changed is public perception. What's changed is fear. And fear can be a tremendous motivator, can it?
Yes. Fear is one of the biggest motivators, I believe. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So we now have people in positions that seem to know saying we'll be wearing masks for the next 2 years. That's absolutely insane. This next round of shutdowns will finish off the businesses that were able to stay open during this last shutdown that we just ended a few weeks ago. They simply can't continue, Doug. The restaurant industry, travel industry, hotels and resorts and so forth, they simply won't be able to survive. Some got deep pockets and will, but many of these are like bread and breakfast, small resorts, family-run resorts. They simply won't be able to survive another shutdown.
Small restaurants.
And that's what's coming.
Yeah. I think masks are a symbol of submission too. With your permission, since you're leading off with this, and we're going to pick up with your mosquito netting, masks on the other side of this. We've got like a 3 minute, video from Reese on what masks really represent. With your permission, I'll play it right now.
It's please, like 3 minutes. Please,
all right. Let's do that. Go ahead, Eric.
First, we were told that wearing masks would do more harm than good, which is what the science still supports. But now, even as the COVID-19 pandemic is turning out to be less harmful than the seasonal flu, we are being told to wear the mask. Austin, Texas has threatened a $2,000 fine for those not wearing the mask. And have even suggested that we wear the mask while at home.
We still need people to wear the mask in public. We still need people to keep social distance and isolation. Ryan, the one thing I want to try to get across today is we need to do that when we're in our homes also.
Science tells us that these masks are doing nothing but hurting our natural immune system. So why is it so important that we wear the mask? If one were to look at what is happening as if it were a massive initiation ritual, then things may begin to make more sense. The initiation ritual can be found throughout all of human history. We find it in ancient tribes and religions, all the way up to modern gangs, fraternities, and in the military. Psychological studies have taught us how initiation rituals work, primarily how they increase a person's desire to conform to the group they are being initiated into. The ritual is almost always the same. First, the initiate is isolated. Their familiar everyday routines are disrupted, and their normal rules of living are altered. The initiates are made to look the same. Their heads may be shaved, they may be given matching outfits, or they may be instructed to wear a mask. These techniques symbolically strip the initiate of their unique identity, so they can cease seeing themselves as an individual and begin seeing themselves as part of the group. The wearer of the mask loses his previous identity and assumes a new one. The initiate is then subjected to just enough trauma to put them in a mild state of cognitive dissonance. This dissonance puts the initiate into a state of confusion and anxiety. They are now ready to be transformed into a member of the initiating group. In their isolation, thoughts they have ignored or buried for years suddenly become unavoidable. Emotions are triggered, and a new window of thought is opened within the initiate's mind. And in this state, the new normal is introduced. This worldwide initiation ritual is creating a massive separation in humanity. The obedient and the defiant are being drawn apart like a chemistry purification experiment. And it would seem that the obedient ones are being initiated into something. The new normal. The new age. The new world order. A world where science no longer matters. A world where blind obedience is all that is respected. And if this is a worldwide initiation ritual, then we can certainly expect the obedient initiated to be turned against the rest of us. For InfoWars.com, this is Greg Reese.
I think Greg Reese does a fine job, by the way, in these short videos. And I'll say this. I think this is about understanding where the leverage of the momentum of the herd of the population is taking us. And I think that there's a great deal of a psychological, many psychological aspects to what we're seeing taking place. And I think this fits right in. This is so exquisite. John Moore, Skidding masks. I think that's just fabulous. I really do. And I think that makes a statement and a very powerful one at that. So congratulations. Like, yeah, I'm going to get me one of those too.
We got your choice of green or white.
Well, let's see.
If you're going on a covert operation in the woods, you want green probably.
Well, wouldn't white be a little bit more, Well, I don't know. I don't want to be accused of being having white privilege.
Well, Doug, a friend of mine, he runs a retail establishment in my area. Very busy place. Dozens and dozens of people come and go every day. Here's what he told me 2 weeks ago. He says, John, I've learned how to tell who the liberals are when they walk in the door. They're the ones wearing masks.
Yep.
And a lot of people came to the same conclusion. It's become a political matter wearing or not wearing a mask. It really has.
Yeah.
And, out here where I live in my part of Missouri, almost nobody wears a mask. Of course, we have very few liberals too. there's not a single Democratic office holder in my county, and there's not going to be for the foreseeable future, even though they keep trying. So we have very few liberals out here are people that will vote Democratic, either one. But wearing a mask has become a political matter. And the clip there, it does make a valid scientific point. You're just making things worse for yourself is all you're doing. You're building up the carbon dioxide in your bloodstream. You're holding things right next to your face that your body's trying to get rid of when you wear these masks. And they do, in simple terms, they do more harm than good. They really do.
Right. I agree.
You know, I'm seeing more and more surgical masks out there, the paper ones that they were in the operating room. The surgeons wear those 30 minutes and they get rid of them. Yeah. And an N95 mask, if you wear it more than 2 hours, you will hurt yourself. You will. And any mask, any cloth mask, you're cutting down the amount of carbon, the oxygen you're getting, and increasing the carbon dioxide in your bloodstream.
Right.
You start feeling lightheaded. That's a clear sign of oxygen deprivation because you're wearing a mask. Now, many, many people have lung issues, heart issues, COPD. It's a long list of people who have those issues. They wear a mask, and it's 90 degrees, 95 degrees, high humidity, and they're outside. They're going to be in an emergency room pretty darn quick, I would say, if they, even if they're just sitting still, and let alone doing any kind of physical activity at all. This is dangerous stuff, and it needs to be stopped. And I don't see any way to stop it, Doug. Do you?
I don't. No. I'm in favor of people who believe. I mean, if you're caring for the sick or if you're sick, wear a mask, but stay home. Stay home. If you're symptomatic, stay home. I don't get how this doesn't have to be hard. It doesn't have to be difficult. And I realize that there's a period of time, incubation, where there's people are asymptomatic. Okay. With the exception.
Doug, it's just the flu. It's just the flu.
Yes, yes.
If you're a healthy adult, the chance of dying is 0.1%.
Correct.
One in a thousand.
Correct. Now, you've got comorbidity factors, though, you know, but okay. Well, okay. You're right.
Well, I said if you're healthy.
If you're healthy.
Now, if you have other issues, comorbidity, of course, and that's true with the seasonal flu as well.
Yep.
Who dies every year the most from seasonal flu? It's people in nursing homes who obviously have compromised immune systems, so they wouldn't be there. That's routine. That's normal. It's expected. It's unfortunate. It's an unfortunate fact of life, but people in nursing homes have compromised immune systems. They get the flu, they get pneumonia, and they die. That's not unusual. It's not newsworthy. It's a fact of life. And that's who's dying now. It's people who have comorbidity, have compromised immune systems. They're obese. They have heart issues. And they get any flu. Doesn't matter if it's COVID-19 and they die now. On top of that, we're seeing headlines. I don't have TV, but when I'm visiting somebody who does and you turn on the news, the leading story is always the COVID-19. How many new infections, how many deaths? It's all smoke and mirrors.
Yes.
There's been multiple examples, people taking sterile swabs that have never touched a human being, men or men, and getting a positive result.
Yep.
If you've had the common cold, you will get a positive result. The president of that country in Africa, who's a scientist, by the way, testing a goat and a piece of fruit and getting a positive result. These numbers are meaningless, Doug. They're absolutely meaningless, but they're being promoted as being real, as being valid, and all of which scares people into compliance. The real goal being to want people to scramble and demand the vaccine as soon as possible. There'll be people paying bribes to get the vaccine first, people calling their senator to get the vaccine first. That's what's happening right now, is the buildup towards it. I've heard more than a month ago that the vaccine will be ready shortly after Labor Day.
Okay.
It's what? Yeah. 2 months away? Almost to the day?
Yeah.
2 months?
Actually.
8 weeks?
Yep.
And that's what will happen, Doug. And the vaccine's what's going to kill people. That will be the killer. And you can take that to the bank.
Now, will this be a mandatory vaccine in your view?
They can't make the vaccine mandatory. What they can do is control access to, if it's federal law, federal property, which would be federal courthouses, military bases, commercial airliners. They can control who gets entrance to those facilities. It would be too much resistance for a across-the-board mandatory vaccine. I'm not sure it would be constitutional anyway. But people will get the opinion. They will believe it's mandatory, even if it's not. They will believe that it is. Now, various states, especially California, New York, Illinois, they may make it mandatory at a state level. Once again, controlling who can go to school, who can access state-owned buildings, state-owned properties, state courthouses, and so forth. So I would expect that in the communist-controlled states of Illinois, New York, California, and the others. It's going to be 8 weeks. Will pass really quickly, Doug.
Oh my goodness! Yeah, but see, here's what I believe. I believe that if enough people say no, and I think we have that majority, we're going to say no, thank you. And I think it's gonna get ugly from that. No, thank you. We're not gonna take it. And if you try to restrict our travel, if you try to restrict our business, John, I can't see this ending well, man. I'm telling you, I can't.
It won't. It can't, and it won't, Doug. It's not meant to. I've not seen evidence connecting the COVID-19 advocates to the Communist Party. Any direct linkage. We can see the indirect linkage where the worst places for lockdowns happen to be the Democrat communist controlled states and cities. So there's a correlation there that needs to be paid attention to. The states with the most freedom have the least issues. And that needs to be noted. Whether evidence will ever be found connecting the COVID-19 advocates in these Democratic mayors and governors, a direct linkage to the Communist Party. I don't know if that'll ever be found or not, but it certainly is something worth noting, that's where the worst issues are. That's where the worst lockdowns are in these, Democrat communist controlled cities and states.
Yeah. 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 That's true. So that now what? I mean, then what? Now what? What's next? How are we going to handle all of this? I mean,
we have several issues going on here.
Yeah.
We have an election in less than 4 months.
Yep.
The first Tuesday in November is less than 4 months away. Not much longer after the vaccine will be released to the public. It doesn't matter who wins, Doug. If the President Trump wins or if he does not win, there's going to be violence following the election. And obviously there already is violence leading up to the election. The goal of Antifa and Black Lives Matter is to have a violent coup, communist insurrection. Some people call it civil war. I'm not sure which is quite accurate. Communist insurrection comes closer to what's going on and what will continue to go on, in my opinion. And it will become violent. They haven't got it yet. It's inevitable that with the millions of concealed carry permit people in this country, that they're going to pick on the wrong person or the wrong car full of people, that one or two or three people are going to be armed and not allow themselves to be injured by the protesters. That's inevitable. I'm surprised it hasn't happened already, especially in a state like Texas or some other state where there's a large percentage of people that do carry concealed, like Florida, for example. It's inevitable that will happen. That's what they're seeking. When they go after our monuments, when they go after, try to block highways, they want the violent pushback. They don't really care about a monument to Christopher Columbus. They just want the attention and they want the possibility of violent pushback, which they'll get. Now they tried that in my home state here, Shannon County. The county seat is Eminence. It was 2 weeks ago. A busload of 40 Black Lives Matter were going to go there. The local sheriff, who only had three deputies, by the way, this is a very small, isolated county. He put the word out on social media. He had 400 patriots that were armed and equipped, ready to meet the Black Lives Matter people head on. And the Black Lives Matter people, they decided to call today and turn around and leave before anything happened. Those kind of incidents are happening all over the country. One of my listeners, Doug, over the weekend, he was going to go to he lives near Joliet, Illinois, which is a far Chicago suburb.
Oh, yeah, I've been there.
I believe it's west southwest of Chicago. And he was going to go to Walgreens and Aldi's, and he thought to himself, well, I'm just going to Walgreens and Aldi's. I don't need to take my pistol. Well, he's on the way there, and the road's shut down by Black Lives Matter with the help of the police. Luckily, he was able to avoid any problem, but he easily could have driven into the middle of something where he was attacked. And now he won't go anywhere without his pistol as of this weekend. I assure you, he will not. And I would advise all our listeners, if you have a concealed carry permit, don't leave home without it. It's like your American Express card. Don't leave home without it.
The pistol and the permit, or the carry weapon and the permit, by the way.
Well, absolutely. Of course, that's all in the most statutes require you to have the permit in your possession.
Right.
Absolutely. This man, he knew his neighborhood. He knew his town. He had no inkling that he would be on just a pleasant, sunny Saturday morning, that he'd be driving into the middle of a Black Lives Matter protest. It didn't occur to him that was even a possibility. And so all our listeners need to wake up and smell the coffee, Doug. Hopefully it'll be Detective Special. And leave the house with that pistol permit and that pistol, a couple of extra magazines if it's semi-automatic, a couple of speed loaders if it's not, and exercise situational awareness. Yeah. Keep the radio on so you know what's going on and can avoid problems. You're better off avoiding a problem rather than driving into the middle of it. Many communities have a local commercial station that will broadcast the news of what's going on locally. And that would be an important thing to do, is to know what's going on locally as opposed to being surprised and being in the middle of something where you could get injured. No normal person wants to be in combat, and that's what this would be. You drive into the middle of one of these protests, you're in combat. And then you've got to figure out a way to get out of it with the least amount of harm to yourself and to your property, that being your motor vehicle. Not a good place to be, Doug.
No, not at all.
A good place at all.
No. One thing I like, and it's difficult to carry, but, you know, the Smith & Wesson Model 29 44 Magnum Dirty Harry gun, 8.5-inch barrel. Boy, I'll tell you, people see that, and, you know, it's like, okay, never mind. We're going to get to your sale. I mean, you're serious about the masks, right? You're
going to. Oh yeah, it's not a joke. It's not a joke.
I'm going to buy one. Several. Let me ask you this: what kind of response do you think you're going to get?
Based on what I'm seeing, it's all very positive. I hope the liberals are outraged and upset. That's another goal of ours. But so far, very positive. When you got a product that doesn't even exist and people are trying to buy it, I think you're on the right track, Doug.
Okay, so this is going to look like almost like window screen, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, pretty much. Yep, that's the whole idea.
Man, I wish I would have thought of that. No, you know. Eric the Tech, why didn't you think of that? Jeez. Okay, so this is going to be good. So sign me up for a box of white ones.
We'll take care of you, Doug.
Yeah, I'm telling you, I'm going to have to, and I'm going to see what people are going to say. But you know, okay, so this is all part of a larger agenda, and I'm going to go back to Black Lives Matter for a second, because, you know, one thing that it really hacks me off, John, is you got these, you got de Blasio or, Wilhelm, what's his face, the real name of the war, mayor of New York City, not de Blasio. That's not his real name. It's Wilfred Warren or
Wilhelm or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. Anyway.
Yeah, that was news to me. I didn't know did he legally change his name? Do you know?
Yeah, it was some time ago. I mean, it was like, my goodness, I've got it here somewhere, but yeah, it was a while ago. Hang on a second here. I've got the entire, so Bill de Blasio decided in his younger years, and I'll just briefly kind of summarize this, to change his name from Warren Wilhelm Jr. Now, why is that?
During World War I, the Kaiser in Germany was named Wilhelm.
Yep.
Kaiser Wilhelm. Maybe he didn't want that association with the German culture and people. I don't know.
Yeah, it was just, it's, you know, look, Bill de Blasio is a communist through and through. Warren Wilhelm Jr. was his given name. And, he, by the way, back in the day, he supported the Sandinistas in Nicaragua. He joined the Nicaragua Solidarity Network in Greater New York. So anyway,
And where did he spend his honeymoon in 1994?
Give me a, okay, where?
Cuba.
Cuba. Okay.
When it was illegal, when it was still illegal to travel to Cuba, you had to go to a third country first before you could go to Cuba. There was no direct flights to Cuba in 1994.
Yeah. Glenn Beck did a really great expose on him. And, I apologize. There's just so much information about these communists in our government that it's ridiculous. It's hard to keep up with. And you're right. The New York City mayor visited the Soviet Union in 83 during the height of Cold War. That was followed, this was followed in 1988 by a trip to support the Marxist Leninist Sandinista revolution in Nicaragua. And, it is in here where, back earlier on, the Cuba was referenced in here. Anyway, but for him to paint along with a group of people, Black Lives Matter in front of Trump Plaza, can you imagine if he would have, or if any one of us would have done that in front of I don't know. Let's see. Let's find out where, Barack Hussein Obama lives right now. And let's go paint White Lives Matter or something like that in front of his house. Do you think we'd get very far? I don't think so. I don't know.
No, we would not. I'm not sure of the politics of the mayor of Washington, D.C., but I doubt we would get very far.
The politics of the mayor of Washington, D.C., it's under C for communist. Go ahead.
Okay. All right. Well, All Lives Matter has become politically charged, and that should be politically neutral, I would think. But apparently a young woman was murdered because she made a statement that all lives matter.
Of course.
We're really entering into an area of mass hysteria, mass insanity in what we're dealing with here, Doug. We really are. And it's not a flippant statement. I think it's accurate, scientifically accurate statement that we're entering an era of mass hysteria and mass fear, not only nationwide, but worldwide. It's not just the United States dealing with the Chinese flu. It's the entire planet. We got some good news, though, in that regard.
Good.
Doctor in Texas, the link's going to be on my website pretty soon. He's duplicating what's being done in Iceland and Taiwan and Japan, where almost nobody dies of the Chinese flu. And it's a inhaled steroid. I don't have the details here in front of me. But
I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. If you follow those protocols, you feel better in minutes.
Yep.
And it's the entire treatment from the time you start till you're done is about $200. So there's no money in it of any consequence. And it works. It's already got a proven track record in countries. Look at Taiwan, for example. Densely populated and very few deaths. Japan, the same thing. Iceland, obviously not as densely populated, but almost nobody dies in Iceland from the Chinese flu. And a proven track record for other purposes with no side effects. And I understand that Senator Ted Cruz people are looking into this as well. And as I said, it's going to be on my website here before the end of the day, hopefully. And people need to know about this because they could, if they do get the Chinese flu, they can ask their doctor for this simple, inexpensive, proven treatment to recover quickly and easily.
I'm looking forward to that. I saw this. I don't recall where I saw it, but I think it was a physician. Maybe it was in Australia or I don't know where it originated, but, it's a steroid that you add to a nebulizer or like a nebulizer and, just a few minutes twice a day and it does work according to the information from this medical doctor. And, it's all good. But, what about the heart damage? I've been reading various legitimate publications. You've got some, potential heart damage. You've got some potential neurological effects. You've got some potential other effects from this, coronavirus. Is that, are these different strains that are causing that, or is this just not 100% accurate? I mean, what's going on there?
Well, I don't know the details. Of course, the people we're talking about that are suffering this damage, we need to look at who these people are. What was their health prior to getting the COVID-19? Did they already have high blood pressure, that they already have underlying issues involving their heart. You know, heart issues and heart disease kills an awful lot of people in this country every year. So I would ask, what was their condition before they got the Chinese flu?
Right.
How many prescription medications were they taking before they got another illness on top of what they were already doing? You know, Doug, men and women our age typically take 5 to 7 to 8 prescription meds every day of their life. Clearly, if you're taking only one, there's something wrong with your immune system that you think compels you to take the one or more pharmaceutical products a day. So if you already have a compromised immune system and you get sick with anything, I think it could cause more damage to your body. And that's the opinion of a homicide detective, not a healthcare professional. So we need more details.
Okay. Yeah. And you're right. And I'm glad you made that distinction as well. Well, all right. Looking at everything that's happened over the last weekend, we're seeing retirement at a record pace. As a matter of fact, New York City, they're stopping retirements because they can't. They've reached the maximum retirements. I mean, you've got police officers that are just fleeing from their jobs because of the lack of support from the cities and their, you know, mayors and such. So it's amazing to me what we're watching. And I think that this is going to be a big, huge backlash against these cities. So what do you think? I mean, you know, with your experience, what do you think about all that?
About the limiting officers can
About the blue flu and about the people, the cops saying, the police officers saying, you know what, I'm done, I'm retiring right now. Yeah, again, New York City, I think there's 400 plus. What the heck was that? I have to go back through and find the actual headline. You're looking at, you know, hundreds of police officers retiring, especially in New York and other places that aren't backing the police. So, I mean, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, first of all, police department's a paramilitary organization, and with paramilitary ranks and paramilitary ways of getting promotions and so forth. There's different kinds of men and women that want to be a police officer. Some want to serve and protect their community. Some looking for a paycheck and a pension. Within those ranks, you got men and women who are not vested in the retirement system, and they would be risking their financial future if they left early. If they're already fully vested in the retirement system, they can leave and collect their pension and not be hurting your family financially. So you're going to see men and women making decisions based on what's best for them, what's best for their families, what's best for their career. If they're not fully vested, if they've only been with the department maybe a year or two, since they graduated from the police academy, they can take those credentials and go almost anywhere in the country as a former New York City police officer and get employment the next day. So you're going to get people of both ends. Those who are fully vested in retirement that can leave and cause no harm. Those who've only been there 1 or 2 or 3 years and want to get out of Dodge. And leaving those in the middle who have invested 8, 10, 15 years towards that pension. And they will reluctantly stay, unwillingly stay, because it's best for their financial future and the welfare of their family to get fully vested in that retirement program before they leave. I don't know what it takes for be fully vested in the New York City Police Department. I've never looked into it, never had any reason to. But I imagine it's at least 8 to 10 years. It may be longer. Typically in that kind of organization, the longer you stay, the greater the retirement pay to give people an incentive to stay even longer.
They're in deep trouble. Yeah, here's what I have from Police One. This is from This would have been on Friday. This and just the last week, officials with the New York Police Department say retirement filings have more than quadrupled over the previous period of last year. And let's see here. So Sergeant Mary Frances O'Donnell said the number of filings between June 29 and July 6 skyrocketed to 411% from the same time in 2019. That's 411%. So, okay, so while the decision to retire, of course, as you said, it's a personal one, you know, you can, it can be attributed to a range of factors. The trend in this case is because we're looking at the lack of support from the city leaders, from the mayor and from the city council. But the rise in filings are directly attributed in this case to the, George Floyd protests and continued calls to defund the police. And de Blasio slashed $1 billion of the NYPD budget earlier this month, about 16.7% of his budget in the 2020 fiscal year. And that's not a good thing, obviously. And you're seeing this happen in San Diego, let's see, and in Dallas, let me look here, Daytona, and other places. I mean, it's just, it's ridiculous. Or Dayton, I'm sorry, not Daytona. So anyway, yeah. So there you have it. That's from.
Well, Doug, when you cut down on budgets, you're cutting down on men and women in uniform. You're cutting down on equipment to be bought that helps the officers do their job and be safe. And the people retiring frequently are the best that they have. The men and women who have been there the longest, have the most experience. Many of whom really do want to protect and serve their community. It will hurt these departments in ways that can't be measured to lose the many of the best and brightest in these departments. Officers will be at risk if, well, body armor, for example, needs to be replaced on a regular basis because it once it gets to be too old, it's not effective anymore. Police officers should have the best and the newest equipment for being out there in the street, so they will be safe. Now, of course, those things will be cut back. When you cut back on funding, everything gets cut back.
Yep.
And I don't know if you saw President Trump's 30-second election commercial about what happens when the police funds are defunded, but it was brilliant. And very well done, and I would encourage everybody to watch it.
No, I haven't seen it. Do you have it linked up at your site or no?
I was supposed to get a link, and I'm not sure the link has been made yet.
All right.
Yeah, it was brilliantly done, very well edited, very professional, of course. Anything coming from President Trump, I'd expect that. But it made a good point in a theatrical, dramatic fashion of the consequences of cutting back on and defunding the police.
Well, you know, this goes directly to an article I read not too long ago where I think this was CNS News. 48 police officers were killed in 2019 in the line of duty. 40. Okay, so that's almost one a week, which is crazy. Between 2010 and 2019, there were 511 felonious deaths of police officers. Again, nearly one every week. And I got a point to make on this, and I'll get to that. But John Moore is my guest, thelibertyman.com. That's his website. Coming soon, masks made of mosquito netting. Sign up to get yours. I'm going to get mine. What a great idea. John Moore, thelibertyman.com. We'll be right back there where we're at.
Mainstream media won't. You're listening to the Hagman and Hagman Report on the Global Star Radio Network.
Exposing the New World Order, you're listening to the Hagman & Hagman Report on the Global Star Radio Network. Stand by. Doug and Joe will be back shortly.
So we have a, Eric the Tech and I have this thing, this code. When the monitor comes on, I have, you know, X amount of seconds to say what I need to say in terms of opening the show. Well, I'm not sure. Eric the Tech, I got to tell you, I'm not sure I like the way this communication is going, but that's okay. You've got X seconds to, you've got, when you see yourself, when you do this, I'm just saying, Eric the Tech, I'm not happy. Welcome to the Hagman Report. What? What'd you throw that at me for? Welcome to the Hagman Report. It's where truth can't be silenced. My guest is John Moore, thelibertyman.com. What a great idea, by the way, about mosquito netting masks. Just as long as you've got something there. But then again, I question too, believe me, I would go that route, especially given the fact that you're breathing in the O2 and stuff, or the CO2, breathing that back in. And create, you know, people are getting headaches and such. So, you know, why as a population must we do this? Now, before the break, I was talking about, the violence against police, and I just want to finish this thought. Last year in 2019, a total of 89 police officers died, where 48 were felonious and, 41 were accidental. In 2010 through 2019, however, 500 felonious deaths of police officers occurred, one nearly every week. But again, last year, total of 89, 48 were felonious, 41 were accidental. Over the last 10 years, there were 1,114 police officer deaths. 511 were as a result of police officers being killed, regardless of the weapon. And 503 were accidental. So you had 511 over the past 5 years. And almost every suspect in connection with the felonious police death had a criminal history. And remember that. The FBI identified 49 responsible assailants in connection to 48 felonious deaths in 2019. And among those assailants, 36 had previously been arrested and 12 were under judicial supervision, parole, probation, that type of thing. And then it's further broken down, the statistics, deaths by firearms. Assailants or offenders used firearms in 44 of the 48 deaths, vehicles in the remaining 4. Most of the weapons were handguns, but 7 officers were killed with rifles and 1 with a shotgun. So, and of the 48 felonious officer deaths in 2019, 45 were male and 3 were female. Of the assailants, 48 were male and 1 was female. And one more thing. These deaths occurred in 19 states and in Puerto Rico. Just to give you an idea, 19 states these occurred in. And when separated by race, 40 of the killed officers were white, 7 were black, 1 was Asian. Among the 49 assailants, 28 were white, so that is more than half. 15 were black, and 1 was a Pacific Islander native, Hawaiian, if you will. So, just to toss out some statistics. Why? Well, you know, when we talk about defunding the police, and we talk about really, you know, what's really taking place out there, these numbers do help in not skewing the truth. So I just wanted to give you those bits of information. All right. Again, my guest is John Moore, thelibertyman.com, every Monday, except we were dark last week, and I want to thank you folks for your patience and, allowing us to do what we needed to do. By the way, if you go to thelibertyman.com, there it is on your screen, the web presence for John Moore. John, since, you know, the last time we were together, I was in my office, not in the studio. Now we're in the studio. Feels good to be back. So, and I want to thank you for coming back as well.
Well, getting back to the mask, they say, yes. There's an old saying, Doug, that necessity is the mother of invention. If it hadn't been for my economic advisor on Thursdays and his dilemma of what he needs to do, along with all the other residents in Arizona, it wouldn't have occurred to me to do what I did and develop and begin to manufacture face masks made from mosquito netting. I have a lot of experience with mosquito netting, being a veteran of Vietnam, and I slept under mosquito netting most nights except when I was in combat. In fact, when I got back to the States, the first morning I woke up stateside, I reached out expecting to touch mosquito netting, and there wasn't any. And my brain was thinking, something's really wrong here. I'm reaching out from waking up from sleep and not touching mosquito netting, because that had become normal, along with stuffing socks into the top of my boots so that nothing could crawl in there overnight and be an unpleasant experience when I went to put my boots on in the morning. So I have a lot of experience with mosquito netting, Doug, and it works. It will be effective to be in compliance. You won't build up carbon dioxide. We're going to put written instructions for people to rinse these things out and dry them overnight so you don't accumulate harmful things on the netting from your breathing out. And I think there's going to be a massive demand for these things. It's going to be a home business for my webmaster, Tim Spencer, and hopefully he'll be able to keep up with demand. We may have to bring another manufacturer, another homebody with a sewing machine if we get too busy, or maybe even two or three. We'll see. I don't know.
So are these going to be handmade? Is that what you're telling me?
Oh, yeah, with a handmade with a sewing machine. Right, correct, yes.
Okay.
Yep.
All right, that sounds good. How many do you how many can you push out a day, do you think?
We don't know yet because production hasn't begun. We're thinking maybe 3 to 5 minutes per mask, and that's just an estimate. I'm thinking once he gets into the swing of it, I'm thinking about 2.5-3 minutes per mask will be what's necessary. So he'll be able to crank out quite a few, and hopefully be able to meet the demand.
Won't that be fun? I really am going to be interested in hearing what kind of response you're going to get. And the reason I'm saying this again is, I don't know if you saw that video about compliance, you know, you wear a mask.
Right.
It's really all about compliance.
And it is.
Do we want to go there? Let me ask you, do we really want to go there? I'd rather say screw you. I'm not wearing a mask. And what are you going to do? I can't do business with you? Well, screw you. I'm not going to do business with you.
Well, that was made real clear to me in the U.S. Post Office 2 months ago. If I did not cover my face with something,
right,
I was not going to be able to get service. And I could stand there until the cows came home and I locked the door at 5 o'clock, but they weren't going to wait on me. They made that really crystal clear.
Okay.
And if you need the service, you got to comply. You know, it's simply no choice.
Yeah.
I could have gone to a FedEx or UPS store, I guess, and made use of their postal service there, if I had chosen to go that route. But, that was, you know, it was made very clear. It was no option. If you wanted to make use of the postal service, you had to comply and cover your face.
Let's see. Again, John, I look at it this way. The more of us who say no, thank you. We don't have to be real morons about it, but hey, you need to wear a mask. No, thank you. I think if everyone did that, if everyone who is anti, this is more, again, this is not about health. This is not about safety or security. And if everyone said, no, I'm not going to do this, and stuck to their guns, we wouldn't have this problem because we outnumber the people who are trying to force us to do this. And you're right. Yeah. So you're going to suffer. You're not going to be able to buy, sell, or trade in this particular instance. But again.
Well, look at alternatives. I could have left there and gone to a FedEx store or a UPS store
and
make use of postal service. Postal services there. I could have done that. And that was my choice, just to tie my handkerchief around my face like Jesse James and be in compliance, because that was my choice at that time. But you're right, Doug. If enough people don't comply and go to alternatives, people who measure the business and the profitability and losses of the business, they're going to figure out pretty quick they're losing business and it's hurting them by these silly regulations that they're implementing.
Well, okay, so look at that ice cream shop. I don't know if I guess it's in California where no guns, including those worn by police officers. It's an ice cream shop. We refuse to serve you if you're wearing a gun, and that includes the cops. Screw you. You know what? Look, I don't need your – now, post office is different, but I don't need your ice cream. And I think, you know, if we start voting with our actions, or if we start letting people know that we're not gonna put up with this, we need to do it. I mean,
it's called voting. Yeah, it's called voting with your feet.
Right.
Is what it's called, and that can be very effective if enough people do it. Otherwise, you know, you're making a statement that is maybe not quite meaningless, but won't get the job done. So it would take massive non-compliance of people voting with their feet, refusing to fly commercial aircraft without, unless they wear a mask, refusing to go to the postal service, other businesses requiring a mask. It will take massive non-compliance to be effective. Otherwise, you're making a statement that has value to you and not many other people. So it will take massive non-compliance to achieve those goals, Doug.
So let's and have massive non-compliance.
I support the idea. Absolutely. Absolutely, I do.
All right. All right. What do you want to talk about next? Because there's so much going on here. I mean, I'm looking at the headlines. I'm looking at line after line after line of headline. I'm looking at election news, too. I'm looking at mail-in ballots. The second wave, speaking of coronavirus. Your pick.
Well, we do need to talk about the election, and we need to emphasize at the beginning of this discussion, a huge percentage of our fellow conservatives are not even registered to vote and don't bother to vote. We still have the numbers. And if we got less than 4 months, if we can get our conservative friends, neighbors, relatives, co-workers registered to vote and get them to the polls, we need an overwhelming vote for President Trump, not just a few percentage points. We need a massive, overwhelming vote in favor of President Trump. That's necessary for two reasons. One, to overcome the vote fraud. There's going to be probably 8 to 10% vote fraud, somewhere in that range. And second, to give the president a very crystal clear mandate that people are behind him and support him for 4 more years to do what needs to be done to turn this country around from its march towards communism. Calling it socialism is being too polite. It's bald-faced communism. That's what it is. And we just need to keep emphasizing that, make sure people know that that's what the fight is, to preserve our republic. That's what it is. Keep our republic from going down that road to become a communist dictatorship. That's what they want. And if we don't get that overwhelming vote, we're putting ourselves at risk, Doug. So you mentioned mail-in ballots a moment ago. That's very dangerous. I was disappointed and surprised that my home state, Missouri, has gone that route, allowing mail-in ballots. I'm not sure what safeguards can be put in to prevent the vote fraud, but if it's proposed in your area, do what you can to oppose it. And if it has taken place in your state, do what you can to make sure that the election, even with mail-in ballots, is free and fair, to the best of your ability, if you have any way to do that.
Well,
everybody can do.
I just want to say this: there are more than 100,000 ballots, mail-in ballots, rejected by election officials in California in March in the presidential primary. 100,000. Think about that. So, yes, you're right. Go ahead. What people can do. I interrupt
well,
you there.
What people can all politics is local, and that saying's been around for a number of decades. Coming from out of Boston, I believe. Anyway, there's more than 3,000 counties in the United States. Most of those 3,000 have an elected sheriff. That elected sheriff, as opposed to appointed, an elected sheriff has the traditional powers by statute and by tradition to be the top law enforcement official in those 3,000 counties. That sheriff needs to be a patriot, a man or a woman who supports and defends the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. That's critical with what's coming at us. That is absolutely critical. And by tradition and statute, in many states, the sheriff is also the commander of the county militia. They may not even know that, but they are. So you need to make sure that your county has a sheriff who supports and defends the Constitution. That's absolutely necessary. If you don't, make sure that you figure out which candidate will be that person to support and defend the Constitution. There's something called Republican Central Committees that mostly 3,000 counties have, and they have Republican committeemen, Republican committeewomen. It's typically about 24 men and women who help make major decisions about what happens in these counties. Many of these positions go unfilled because nobody even bothered to file for office. I'm the Republican committeeman in my township for my county, and we do have unfilled slots in my county in these Republican committeeman, committeewoman positions. Yep. We have a republic. A republic can't work if people don't participate, if they're not registered to vote, if they don't get out and vote, if they don't fill in these positions that are part of how we do business. When I go to the Republican committee meetings, I'm sitting next to the prosecuting attorney. I'm sitting next to the sheriff. I'm having dinner with all the elected officials. And we get to know each other and trust each other. And we discuss everything, not just the matters of our county. We discuss going on in the national scene, what's going on in the international scene. And our goal is to make sure our county is safe. And our county is a good place to do business and to get married and raise a family, for all the things that go into that. And that's why I participate, to help make my county a good, safe, place, a pleasant place to be. And our system can't work if people don't participate. If you think your vote doesn't count, well, it certainly won't if you don't vote, will it, Doug?
Mm-mm.
It can't.
No, but this is too late.
We had a woman run for judge in our county, run as a Republican. This is several cycles ago. And her own family didn't vote for her. She lost by 6 votes. Her family was bigger than 6 people, by the way. And that's in these local elections, every vote counts.
Ouch.
And we ended up with a guy that we really didn't want. All the cops hated him.
Okay.
because of his liberal decisions that he had. I like the guy, but he's you know, politically I'm 100% disagreement with him. But that's how important each vote is.
Yeah.
At the local level, at the city level, at the county level, and even at the state level. Every vote counts, every vote makes a difference in many of these 3,000 counties. 2 or 3 or 8 or 10 votes makes the difference. Who gets elected and who does not get elected? And these lower offices, these prosecutors and judges, they're stepping stones to higher office. These men and women become state reps and state senators, who in turn become United States reps and United States senators.
Yep.
These are very important. They're critical. And this is where people can have a great, all your listeners out there, Doug, this is where they can have great effect, getting their friends, their neighbors. And I'm going to emphasize conservative friends, conservative neighbors, conservative relatives. If they're liberals, don't even talk to them. Why bother? If they can figure it out, let them figure it out. But get the conservative people registered to vote. Make sure that they know when election day is, that if they can't be there, if they vote absentee ballot. I've had to do that a few times myself because I had conflicts, scheduling conflicts. If they need transportation to the polls, get them to the polls. They need child care, provide child care. Whatever it takes, we need an overwhelming positive vote for all the good conservatives nationwide at every level, at the township, at the town level, at the county level, at the state level, and, of course, the president and vice president. It goes without saying.
You remember the new Black Panthers back in, I think it was 2008, when they were voting, The new Black Panthers in Philadelphia stopping people from voting from for anybody but Barack Obama. Remember that? They were armed.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Oh, yes.
And there's so that was in your face. I mean, that was so in your face. And, of course, Holder, as attorney general, did nothing at all, you know.
Shocked.
Yeah. Doggone right. Oh, my God. But I guess my concern here now is we are looking at a situation, I think, like never before, where the voting fraud is going to be so intense, so widespread, and so multifaceted that I could very easily see this election being stolen from or by the left. So here's my question. What's going to happen if, well, what's going to happen either way? If Donald Trump loses or if Donald Trump wins, there's going to be violence. I see violence coming. I also see right before the election, there's going to be something that they're going to do to try to stop this election. The normal process of, or the normal, process of election. And, not to be in Donald Trump's favor. It's going to be, against him. So, it all sounds like, you know, really good under a normal situation. Drive people to the polls, make sure you're registered. But is that enough?
Well, that's what we can do, Doug. We're talking to many, many thousands of people all over this country right now, you and I.
Right.
And that's what people can do. They can make sure that they're registered. They can make sure that their conservative friends, relatives, coworkers are registered. They can make sure people get to the polls.
Right.
That's real things that average people can do. It won't cost them anything except a little bit of their time. It won't cost any money. And, it can have a tremendous effect nationwide. It can have a big effect in your local town and in your county. And, we need to keep emphasizing that because you're right. The vote fraud will be rampant on one hand. On the other, they only do a certain percentage of vote fraud before it becomes obvious to everybody. Yeah, so we need to overcome that. We know in advance it's going to happen. And if we saw the numbers, I need to keep emphasizing this. Right now, Caucasian American teenagers are in a minority. That's where the demographics are headed. You and I will live to see the time when young adult Caucasians are the minority in this country, Doug. That's coming pretty soon, within less than 10 years. And, of course, those demographics move on up the age scale as time moves forward. But for the time being, we still have the numbers. For the time being, we can still pull this off. We saw recently, I believe it was the Oklahoma rally for President Trump, where the liberals tried a new tactic. They reserved as many seats in that auditorium as they could with no intention of showing up so that other people who were Trump supporters couldn't go there because the reservations were already made by the communists who wanted to make sure that there was lots of empty seats in that auditorium. I'm sure the president has developed a way to nullify the communists reserving all the seats in the auditorium and with his other rallies. But that's how devious these people are. They will do whatever it takes to compromise this election, stop this election. If it means killing people, they will kill people. They're absolutely desperate. They can't let this president get reelected, Doug. They're done for two generations.
Yeah.
The appointments of federal judges and Supreme Court justices will wreck their plans for at least two generations because he's appointing young people who will be there for decades into the future. At least 20 to 30 years minimum. And they can't do that. They know they're done with our system of government. They can't win without having control over the judiciary, and they're about to lose it. If President Trump's in another 4.5 years, this is July, it'd be 4.5 years if he's reelected.
Right.
They're finished and they know it. I'm looking at just widespread violence between now and Election Day to disrupt the election, to disrupt society, to do whatever they can to make sure we do not have a normal election, maybe not have an election at all. If they could pull that off, they'd be just tickled, I think, if they could do that.
Oh, man, who'd have thought we'd be talking about this in this time, at this time? You know, we were called conspiracy kooks, even referencing this with respect to Obama. Now look where we're at. I want to ask you this, and you had indicated this previous shows and early on. You know, the Trayvon Martin, George Zimmerman situation that really kind of sparked, really was responsible for the birthing of Black Lives Matter, you know, the three communists and such. Joel Gilbert had done an investigation. I don't know whether you saw this or not, but here's the bottom line. And it's such a great video investigative documentary to go through, but here's the bottom line. The prosecuting or the witness for the prosecution, the girl that was supposed to be on the phone with Trayvon Martin, was a fraud, was a plant. She lied. And the prosecution was aware of this. Are you familiar with this story about this at all?
I'm not, Doug, but it is critical. And, you know, initially there was no charges filed against Zimmerman because he was defending his life.
Right.
And, so did they bring in a new prosecutor or keep the old one when they went after Zimmerman? Or did the attorney general come in, the state attorney general?
You know, I'm not 100% sure on that. I was so focused on the investigation of Joel Gilbert doing it.
Well, there's two parts to this. What happened initially is what I'm more aware of. And, you know, the incident happened. The police wrote the report. The prosecutor said, well, we're not going to charge him because it was self-defense. And they mentioned Castle Doctrine, which Castle Doctrine had nothing to do with what Zimmerman was doing,
right,
for defending his life. Zimmerman found himself on his back with a former football player on top of him, beating his head against the concrete.
Yeah.
Now,
in like five clearly, different areas.
Yeah. And that's, yeah, that's, you know, if a former football player is on top of you beating your head against the concrete, he's trying to kill you. There's no two ways about it. Of course he's trying to kill you. And all 50 states allow you to use deadly force against deadly force. End of story.
Right.
End of story. There's nothing else to discuss once you know those facts. Now, I'm not sure who came in, if it was somebody else from the county prosecutor's office or from the Florida Attorney General's office, to go ahead and prosecute Zimmerman, but to use fabricated evidence in the form of this woman's testimony and the letter that she denies writing, and we don't know who wrote the letter, that's unethical and illegal. And the prosecutors who did that should certainly be reprimanded and possibly lose their bar license, possibly charged with a criminal offense themselves. Which I doubt is going to happen. It's been, you know, it's probably,
it's been too long.
Statute of limitations expired on that.
But I thought of you, because I had Jack Cashel in the studio last week, and I thought of you when he was talking about Joel Gilbert's expose, and I watched the expose, and as I'm watching this, I'm starting to get more and more angry. And then I see, wait a minute, I mean, the lies were so obvious, and so, I guess what I'm saying is, what you witnessed with respect to the riots consequential to George Zimmerman, Trayvon Martin, all built on a lie, but even worse than that, it was built upon evidence that was known to be fabricated, and the prosecution said, that's okay. And I mean, John, if it were you, me, or anyone else, I don't know, we'd still be rotting away in prison. And this, I'm going to tell you, the girl who testified, who gave a deposition, and oh, it was painful to watch. Oh my goodness, it was painful to watch. She was barely, she couldn't communicate. She couldn't communicate. And she couldn't write. She couldn't even sign her own name. That's how bad this was. This is how obvious this was. And
well, it's actually that used to mean something, Doug. But most Americans under age 30 can no longer sign their name either if they went to public schools.
Yeah, I know. I know. And it hurts me, by the way. She said, by the way, I can't read cursive. Now, she said it. I said it in a much more.
Well, if you can't read it, you can't write it either, obviously.
Good point.
And it's a sad commentary, but a week ago, Sunday, the 4th day of July, a client of mine was released after spending 10 years in prison for something he didn't do, charged with murdering his girlfriend in 1982.
Well, you suck, John. I mean, why'd you let him go to prison? I'm sorry. I had to throw that in there. We've all been there, I think.
Well,
you know,
it's not many murders where I find myself working with the police to exonerate a man, but I had lunch a week ago. It'll be a week ago tomorrow with two former deputies that all three of us worked to try to exonerate this man. And we, during our lunch, we talked about how the Highway Patrol investigator lied and how the prosecutor from the state's attorney's office withheld evidence from the jury because he filed a motion. The judge allowed the evidence to be withheld. Yeah. And this man who he's an older gentleman, he's in his early 80s with multiple health issues, very fragile, very frail, spent 10 years in state prison for something he did not do.
That's horrible. That's horrible.
It was an absolute travesty, a miscarriage of justice.
And for those people who are out there saying, well, it was a mean thing to say, I was joking. I think anyone who's worked in the system has some level of experience of that where you know a person is innocent and you just watch that process churn forward and it'll chew you up
and spit you out is what it'll do. Yeah. Doug, is there any, am I correct that you're, civil lawsuit is at an end or near an end?
It's been amicably settled.
Okay. Well, that has to be a big relief for you and your family.
It is.
Yeah, have it finally be over. Well, praise the Lord. That's good.
Yeah.
It's been a long haul, several years, I know.
Yeah, it's 4.5. It's amicably settled, and that's really all I can say about it. But, I thank the people out there who stand behind all of us. And you know, that brings a different point. I had Roger Stone on Friday, and he was talking, you know, he received his commutation Friday night. And I just was thinking over the weekend about the really about how this – how are our legal system in general, not specifically, but in general, but also including Roger Stone, how it really has been weaponized by the left. It's amazing to see, you know, and Roger Stone, John, can you imagine waking up in the morning, you know, and you're.
We've talked about it.
Yeah, can you imagine
We've
that?
Talked about it. Well, I can. Obviously, I can. And I hope some high-level heads rolled in the FBI after that circus, a very serious circus. And after that happened, I did a quick little bit of homework to determine how the FBI arrested John Gotti. Now, John Gotti, well, before we even go any further, Roger Stone is a nonviolent man who was charged with nonviolent offenses that he didn't commit, but he was charged nonviolent offenses at his home, in his bed, when, what was it, 24 or so guys dressed up like Ninja Turtles with all their SWAT gear and a helicopter and a boat behind the house showed up to make this arrest of this nonviolent person. John Gotti, on the other hand, spent his entire adult life committing serious violent crimes, including murder. If he didn't do them themselves, he ordered them done. Yep. That's who John Gotti was. So how did the FBI arrest him? Did they go to his house at 4 o'clock in the morning with the SWAT teams? No. They found out where he's having dinner. His family wasn't present. Some of his gang, mafia buddies were there, four or five of them. They walk in wearing coats and ties. Mr. Gotting, you're under arrest. You need to come with us, sir.
Yep.
That was it. That was it. They didn't scare the hell out of his family with two dozen SWAT team guys and carrying machine guns and helicopters and boat behind the house. Mr. Gotti, you're under arrest. You need to come with us, please, sir. That was it. Now, same FBI. What's the difference? The difference is who was in charge. Now, at the time, the people in charge of the FBI were holdovers from Obama. Otherwise, I don't believe that would have happened. What do you think, Doug?
You know, I'm kind of, I know what you're saying. Yes. And how Gotti was treated, for example, shows the disparity between, the protected class and those people who are political enemies. But let me ask you in response to that question, let me ask you a question. Radley Balko, I don't know if you know that name. He wrote a book titled The Rise of the Warrior Cop. And he was talking about the militarization of the police and the militarization specifically of America's police force. And he did so in a rather negative way that made sense to me. And I happen to agree with his premise that the police policies that led to the militarization of America, American police, it stokes a certain amount of outrage, or it should stoke a certain amount of outrage at the misuse of state power in the most brutal fashion, I suppose, and that would be the heavily armed police raiding the homes of the unarmed, nonviolent suspects, like you had mentioned, Stone versus the way Gotti was treated. So I guess my question to you is, things that are on balance, we know that the bad element out there have outgunned the, or outgunning the police. My question to you is, should the police be militarized to the extent that they are for their own personal, protection or no?
Well,
that's okay. Kind of a compound question.
Yeah.
It's difficult to really address. And
yeah, it's, I had a surveillance in St. Louis. This would have been the, I did, you know, there was a 5-year block of time where I did nothing but surveillance. You know, that's where the money was at the time. This was from about 1986 until 1990 or so. This would have been about 1989, 1990.
Okay.
So we're looking at, you know, a while back in the ghetto of St. Louis. So it was a 2-man surveillance, 2 vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
And, we had radios and we met on the parking lot of the community center where we were doing our equipment check our weapons, check our body armor, check our radios, check our protocols for communication. Right at the summons, it was a 12-hour surveillance from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. So my other operative is about a half a block east of the subject's house. I'm about a half a block west. And, so we get in position and about 8 o'clock, I hear some random gunfires and my call sign was Tiger. My part was Snake. And I say, Tiger to Snake, you copy gunfire, Snake to Tiger, or Roger that, copy. And it was sporadic gunfire up till about midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning when we started hearing automatic weapons fire, machine guns. At the same time, St. Louis City Police were patrolling the area with the routine patrol was 2 squad cars with 2 officers each, 10 feet behind the other, so that when they responded to a call, one officer would protect the 2 vehicles while the other 3 went in to take care of whatever needed to be taken care of. Well, about 10 or 11 o'clock at night, the 2 cars stopped by my vehicle, and it was a female sergeant, and we talked a little bit, and she said, I just need to find out who this white guy was in my neighborhood and why he was here. And we exchanged some pleasantries and about, you know, what the situation was. And she went back to her patrol car and continued her shift until 11 p.m. Point being, these inner cities have been war zones for decades, Doug, where the police themselves won't go anywhere unless they got two patrol cars with four officers on routine patrol. It's just the way it is. That's business as usual. Where automatic weapons fire is routine and normal. Machine gun fire in these cities at night is routine and normal. So if you don't know what's really going on in these cities, you really don't understand how these police feel they need to have proper equipment and proper training to be safe going to a combat zone. They now have armor built into the doors of these vehicles to stop bullets. That never used to be the case.
Right.
Their body armor, they frequently wear level 3 body armor, which will stop a rifle bullet. That never used to be the case. They need it. And I would say God bless them for getting their hands on it, because many of these criminals, they have Kalashnikovs with armor-piercing bullets, and they mean business. Now, to combine this discussion with an earlier one, there's been intercepts of, in Florida, for example, deliveries of firearms parts going to somebody in Florida that would convert semi-automatic AR-15s to full-automatic AR-15s. Thousands of these kits have been delivered, which now, by the way, can't be sold legally. So I see very good reason for the militarization, if that's what it's called. Although the media sometimes gets it wrong. During the Ferguson riots, for example, the St. Louis County Police had bought a used Brinks armored car, the kind that you see delivering cash to the various stores and banks and so forth. They had bought this thing used, and they painted it blue so it would look like a police vehicle. Well, the mass media, CNN and so forth, they report this as being a military armored car. No, it wasn't. It was just a used Brinks armored car is all it was, that the police were using to protect their own people. There was nothing demonic about it, nothing military about it. It was just a routine armored car that had been repainted. But the civilian reporters didn't know the difference. They thought it was something that just came out of Iraq or Afghanistan. It was not. It was just another Brinks armored car with a different paint job on it. Now, where I have issues myself is where the police do these no-knock entries that aren't necessary. The most egregious example, of course, is what happened in Waco, Texas. That was a massive crime that has never been resolved.
Right. I'm not even sure I'd put that in the same class as a no-narc. No-narc.
Well, of course it is. That's what it was. There was no-narc.
I guess they classified.
They just opened fire on the double doors to the entrance of the church. It wasn't even a compound. The media calls it a compound. A compound has to have either a fence or a wall to be a compound. It was just a church. Men and women minding their own business. And the ATF did not knock. They did not announce themselves. They just started shooting through the front door with no provocation whatsoever. And those doors, by the way, are still missing. The doors survived the fire, as you might expect, commercial steel entryway doors. And they're just gone, because that's hard evidence that the bullets were coming from the outside, not from the inside initially.
And the no-knock warrants, by the way, shreds the Fourth Amendment.
There can be a legitimate reason for it.
Yeah,
for officer safety or to prevent evidence from being destroyed. The examples we've seen, however, they break down the door of the wrong house, and the occupants are trying to defend themselves against criminals. And people get hurt and people get killed. There's no excuse for that. That is unacceptable behavior. And if the evidence that they're seeking can't be flushed down a toilet, if there's no reason to believe that the people inside are going to cause harm, just do what the FBI did for decades. You walk up to the front door wearing a coat and tie. You knock on the door and announce your presence and why you're there.
Right.
The FBI did that for decades. And I don't know why that can't continue to be done.
Well, okay. In the book I mentioned, Radley Bolko's book, and I'm going to try to get him on the air. But I just want to kind of convey this to you and get your thoughts on this, because I've been wrestling with this, and I gotta, you know, I believe that the police should be well protected, but I believe the police are in the position they're in because of the politicians, their crap, laws that permit, this violence against the police. But let me just read this to you. Cite this from the review and from the dust jacket here. He writes this: the last days of colonialism taught America's revolutionaries that soldiers in the streets bring conflict and tyranny. Okay, so if you have soldiers walking the streets, yeah, tendency for conflict and tyranny based on our history. As a result, our country has generally worked to keep the military out of law enforcement. Okay, so, okay, I see that. But as we've seen over the last couple of decades, and especially in recent years, we've seen that America's cops have increasingly come to resemble ground troops. And I agree with that if you look at the recent pictures. And the consequences have been dire. And this is where they get into the Fourth Amendment, where your home is no longer a place of sanctuary, especially with no-knock warrants. Police said today have been conditioned to see the citizens as that they serve as an enemy, if you will. But today's armed policemen are a far cry from the constables of early America. The unrest of the 60s brought about the invention of the SWAT unit. Of course, you remember the water tower incident, University of Texas. Let's see here. Reagan's war on poverty. Nixon's war on drugs, Clinton's cops program, post-9/11 security under Bush and Obama, and so on, kind of all brought us to this, to where we're at today. So, okay, so the reason I said all of that is Bolko, in his book, talks about how the laws instituted by politicians, they're relentless declarations of war against vague enemies. We have a war against crime. We got a war against drugs. We got a war against terror. We got a war against, I mean, insert whatever here. Okay. It shows how over a generation this battlefield has formed on America's streets. And I'm just curious as to, you know, is this really, as much as I am pro police department, I'm just not a pro army police department, if you will, or militarized police department. I don't know what I don't know. It's just something I saw, and I don't even know how to articulate this any further, John. And even if I should,
well, I don't see the issue as being what equipment the police have or their training, as much as the laws are expected to enforce, the leadership the police have. We have very recent examples of, go back to Ferguson, for example. The San Luis County Police were initially the responders who were there. A very good friend of mine was there within minutes, Command Sergeant Major Dan Page. He didn't leave for days. They weren't properly fed. They didn't have housing for these guys. But the governor basically took over, and he appointed a black highway patrol captain to be on the field commander there, taking the St. Louis County police commander out of the picture. The first thing the police captain did was tell the police officers they would not go back on the street wearing their body armor. And he almost had a second riot on his hands, and that, of course, would have been the police officers. They weren't going to go back out in the streets of Ferguson without wearing their body armor. It was not going to happen. We have other examples more recently of the mayor of Seattle, mayors in other cities, Portland and so forth, putting their officers on stand down. And quite frankly, these officers have used an awful lot of restraint. If somebody's throwing a brick at you, Doug, they're trying to kill you. Of course they are. And all 50 states would allow you to use deadly force against that person. Of course they would. But despite being having bricks thrown at them, they did not use deadly force against these individuals. And they had their full body armor on, helmets, shields, body armor, and they did not respond with deadly force, although they would have been justified in doing so. So the leadership in these cities allowed the communists to take over six square blocks of downtown Seattle to destroy property in, with the I think it was in Atlanta, Georgia, where the state police headquarters was damaged and fire set in there. Portland, the same thing. Other jurisdictions have had similar problems. And it comes down to the leadership, in my opinion, Doug. Not what whether the officers look like look like the army or not. It comes down to the leadership. What orders these men are given. What laws they're expected to enforce. The job of drug enforcement is to eliminate government competition with the government. The government moves the vast quantity of drugs.
Thank you.
And that's well known and well documented.
Yep.
And Tom Cruise did a docudrama showing that, and pretty accurately, actually, the people who know what happened in Mena, Arkansas, know that what Tom the what was it American the title of the film with Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
American Made or American Born or something like that. Well, we'll get it here in a moment. But I've seen this also where the feds focus on eliminating competition. My barefoot hillbilly neighbors that are making methamphetamine and putting themselves and their children in harm's way, they should be arrested. Of course they should. But the people moving in cocaine here with aircraft by the ton, they will continue to move into cocaine by aircraft by the ton. It's not going to stop. I spent an hour debriefing a retired DEA field agent. Here's what he told me, Doug. Every field operation, every drug intervention, interdiction operation we did my entire career, once we got to the third level above the street dealer, the operation was shut down. We were all reassigned without fail. That happened every drug intervention for his entire career. I debriefed a federal court clerk who had been doing it for more than 20 years. And I said to her, you ever seen a sentencing here of anything other than a low-level mule, somebody just carrying the stuff? No, never. Never seen a sentencing for anybody above that level, ever. So there is not now, never has been, never will be, a real drug war. Anybody who completes any police academy knows how to shut down the drug trade. Here's what you do. You make an arrest of somebody selling drugs, and you cut them a deal. You let us know where your drugs come from, and you get a better deal. Then you arrest that person, and you do the same thing. And you arrest the next person, and you work your way up the drug chain to arrest everybody connected to the initial arrest. It's simple police work that you learn in any police academy, isn't it, Doug?
Absolutely. That's the way.
And why hasn't
that
happened?
That's the way it's supposed to work.
Why hasn't that happened? Because the serious drugs, the serious money, are taken over by the feds, and it's not allowed to happen. It's not allowed to happen, and it won't be allowed to happen. It's a fantasy.
Yeah.
Except for teenagers growing marijuana in their backyard, my barefoot, illiterate, hillbilly neighbors making, what they make, and so forth. But the real drugs, the real money, it won't be disrupted. It won't be tampered with. It's just not going to happen.
So, and American Made, by the way, was the name.
American Made. Yeah, American Made. Right.
So, so what the hell do we do to fix this? Do we just gut the entire system and say, you know what, the CIA, the
individual sheriffs can do it if they got the guts, if they're willing to lose their federal funding. Now, that's what it would take. It would take, I was almost part of a effort to do that. It didn't pan out. But if you're willing to give up the federal funding and take these things on, you can get an individual county more or less clean. I think it would be difficult, but it could be done.
Okay. And I think at some point when the crap hits the fan, and I think it will, we're going to have to put that on a short list of things to do when we take back our country. And that is to, reinstall values and reinstall the, proper procedures.
Well, and until the demand is gone, there'll always be supply.
Well, true.
After supply is a fool's errand.
Right.
If there's demand, there will always be a supply. If there's demand for guns inside a prison, there will be guns in a prison. If there's a demand for drugs in a prison, there will be drugs in a prison.
Yes.
That's well known and well documented that people get guns in prisons.
So it's a
matter of demand, not supply.
I agree with
that's
you on
issue.
That. Yes, but I think an insurrection, if we fight one, I think that demand is going to go way down because I think a lot of people are going to have big issues and self-destruct based on the lack of availability given the insurrection that takes place. So if you're looking for your next fix, you ain't going to find one. And if you go looking for one too hard, you're going to end up room temperature, or 6 feet under. Instead of 6 feet apart. But anyway, so that's just my view. Man, what a mess we're facing out there today. John, I don't want to leave people with...
Well, our republic is at risk.
Yes.
There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
Our republic is truly at risk, and people need to get ready for, as the old saying goes, plan for the worst and hope for the best.
Right.
The worst would be an outright invasion by the Soviets and the Chinese. That's certainly on the table. In the meantime, we got an election coming up. We got to get prepared to deal with another shutdown because of this make-believe Chinese flu that is no worse than any other seasonal flu. So we got to deal with what's on our plate right in front of us right now, while keeping in mind that bigger and worse things could happen in the not-too-distant future.
Boy, you're right. Well, John, we're at the end of the program. I can't wait for your new face mask to come out.
It'll be fun. We're going to have fun with this. Yeah, we will.
Do you have a name for your product line or anything?
Phoenix Masks.
Phoenix Masks.
Phoenix Masks, yep.
All right. I want people, though, you're going to be announcing it on your website?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, when they're ready. It's not time, but when it's time.
TheLibertyMan.com is where you're going to have to watch. Also listen to the Liberty Man Monday through Friday, his radio show. He has a fantastic radio show, a hell of a lot better than mine.
Come on, Doug.
I'm telling you. No, seriously, you've got some really good stuff going on your show, and I commend you for everything that you do.
Well, thank you, sir. Well, let's talk privately soon.
Yes, we'll do. All right, folks. John Moore, TheLibertyMan.com. We have fun together. I hope you know we have a lot of fun. He's a good guy. He really is. He's a man that he's been through it. He's a good guy. I have a feeling he's going to have a little bit too much fun making those masks. That's for sure. Tomorrow, Randy Taylor is going to be joining me in the first segment. Randy Taylor in the first segment, you know him. Having a report intelligence analyst along with Stan Dale, second segment, and more to follow after that. May God bless each and every one of you. Thank you so much for joining me today. And God bless. Have a good night.